Welcome everybody for the session actually. So this is going to be a computer demonstration after following a brief presentation. So welcome to this, and I'll introduce Dr. Sean Granis. He is an informaticist as well as also is a great family practice. So you get to see the practitioner side as well as the informatics side of it. And then he has been helping us with the reportable condition mapping table and providing guidance to CDC and several public health. So we're going to see the system demonstration, how they've been using it in Registry of Institute and Indiana HIE. So with that, I'll just get him to do the demonstrations.
Great, thanks. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to bounce back and forth, I think, between the two computers. I do want to set up this process before I do the software demonstration so that you understand the context in which we do it. This is anybody who's tried notifiable condition detection knows that it's not straightforward. Everything we wish would be straightforward, but it's not. I'm just going to fix a cable here while I'm talking. Understanding the context in which we do it, I think, is important. Just very briefly about myself, I'm a family physician. I was trained as a medical informatician at the Regents Reef Institute, and I've been there for the last now 11 years and have been working on notifiable condition detection essentially since I've been there. Tell you a little bit about the history of it, but let me just give you some takeaways, because I know that anybody who's given talks before knows you're only going to remember three things when you walk out this door. So one of these three things is we've been doing this for 10 years, and it's automatic. So that's one of the key points I want you to take away from this, is a lot of interest and energy in automated case detection today. And we want to, as an academic, and just as a person who likes to do meaningful things, we want to get the best practices out there. At Regenstrief, we not only talk about what does work, we want to be able to tell you what we think doesn't work, and oftentimes we know what doesn't work because we screwed up. And we want to be able to share that with you as well. What I'm going to talk about here, and Sundak said it was a brief presentation. Frankly, it's going to be about 20 to 30 minutes of me talking before we get to the software, so if you need to go get coffee or anything, you can leave. But the context, you might be missing it a little bit. And there are some real considerations that you need to be thinking about with automated electronic case detection as well. So I talked about the context. I'm going to talk about some of the real challenges that I see in this process. I want to give you an overview of the system basics, and then I'll do the software demonstration, and then I'm going to tell you where we're thinking about going next with this. So that's really the overview of what we're going to be talking about. So the context of the system, we are the Regents Reef Institute founded the nation's longest running and most comprehensive health information exchange in the country. It's the Indiana Network for Patient Care. We today have over 100 hospitals connected to it. They send various types of data to us. This health information exchange has been running since the mid-1990s. We receive data, any type of clinical data you can imagine, it goes into the repository. We have over 20 million patient registrations in the system, about 12 million unique patients. We receive in total on a daily basis over 2 million transactions a day. We process every one of those transactions to determine whether or not it's reportable to public health using the system that I'm going to show you. But again, this morning I was talking with some folks, and I'm not sure if they're in the room right now, but they came up and asked, how in the world are you guys doing what you're doing? And I described the system, and they said, well, we're only a one- or two-man shop. And the reality is, we can do what we're doing with the software I'm going to show you because we're doing it in the context of health information exchange. We could not run the notifiable condition detector as a standalone product because there's complexities. We need to map data. We need to build business rules. We need to evolve the systems as the data that we're being sent evolves. And so there's a lot of care and feeding of these systems. And even as we get more clear guidance on standards, the evolution of healthcare data is not going to stop. There's always going to be new tests. There's always going to be errors in the data that are introduced by people. And so the care and feeding of these types of systems, even as we build the standards, which we have to do, and I'm not arguing that we shouldn't build standards and get clear best practices, but there's a lot of care and feeding of these processes, particularly automated processes. A human being can't look at 2 million transactions a day. So if you want to find reportable results automatically, you've got to build systems that can, with a reasonable degree of accuracy, and what's reasonable for one state or one region might be different from others, but you have to build something that that meets your needs. So, and in fact, the software I'm going to demonstrate, I would love to see it rolled out everywhere in the country, but I'm a realist. I don't think that's going to happen, because everybody has slightly different needs. But I think there are a great deal of best practices you can learn from this system, some gotchas or approaches that you might not have thought about, that we've thought about and been bitten by, that you might be able to learn from. So with that, we'll move on here. Oh, I've got to bounce back here. Our system is, you can't just use the data in our system for any purpose. It has to be approved. This is just to give you an idea of the coverage. So I've already mentioned it's 2 million transactions a day, but this gives you a sense of darker green is more dense data coverage, how much of the population is covered in a particular zip code tract. The darker the green, the closer to 100% we have. Some regions are over 100% in our health information exchange. Why is that? People die. And so, yeah, people die and new people are born, and so you can actually have data on more people in a zip code track than actually are living at the time. And you can also see that we are expanding out into other states slightly because patients don't really pay attention to state lines. They go to the nearest hospital or healthcare system that's convenient for them. So we see patients from a variety of places. So that's the health information exchange in which we built this system. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the assumptions we make and some of the challenges that we see. So what are the premises? Well, if we want to manage, and I'm probably preaching to the choir now, if we want to manage well our public health disease burden, we have to know what that burden is, right? In order to allocate the right resources. Determining that disease burden, determining what's actually going on in your community, is dependent on the information generated most largely from clinical enterprise, right? If you want to know how much chlamydia is in your community, where are people being treated for chlamydia? Largely in healthcare centers, right? They're not going to JCPenney for that. They're going to the healthcare center. Are they going to public health? Sure, and we treat that as a health clinic. But clinical healthcare is the problem, though, is public health relies on clinical data for their processes, but clinical care is highly variable. So we see variations in care not only across organizations. So One formulary might prefer one antibiotic for a given disease. Another formulary prefers another antibiotic. They report differently. Who reports at one organization? Well, the doctor does. Who reports at another organization? Well, the infection control personnel does. So there's variations across institutions. And then there's variations over time within the same institution. So when we're building these technical systems, we actually have to think about the fact that the people who set up the processes are changing quite a bit as well. So half of physicians today have a fully functional EHR system. Will meaningful use drive that above 50%? We'll see. Some people think so. We know, though, that physicians vastly underreport reportable conditions to public health. In fact, in emerging infectious disease in January of this year, they did folks from North Carolina did a study, and depending on the disease, the reporting rate can be anywhere from 0% for some diseases to around 70%. So physicians don't do a good job of reporting. And there's a lot of reasons why they do that. So when we talk about these reporting systems, we need to be thinking about how much we truly want to rely on the clinician to do the reporting, the clinical system. And then, of course, another challenge on the challenge slide here is that the reporting requirements vary over time, right? So we are seeing a drug-resistant Klebsiella pneumoniae emerge in Indiana. So public health has asked us to start reporting that. In Indiana, folks would like to see confirmatory tests like quantitative HIV RNA tests. That's not necessarily the rule in all states. In Indiana, all lead results are reportable to public health. That's not true in every state. So there are variations in reporting requirements. So doing these systems and building the rules to do it are challenging. So again, I'm probably preaching to the choir in terms of recognizing that this is hard. But we've built a system that we think can accommodate these challenges. So our strategy, first and foremost, we never ask for more data before we understand what data is already being collected electronically in healthcare systems. So we start by using existing clinical data. And we want to minimize the need for these horrible reporting rates from clinicians. I'm a doctor, so I can give physicians a bad time here. So we want to minimize the need for using them by standardizing to the extent possible all of this heterogeneous data. So the different vocabularies, the different messaging standards. I've got to standardize it so computers can automatically detect. Because if you want to get human beings out of the loop as much as possible, you've got to make the data as standard as possible. And again, that's very challenging. If you're a one-man shop, I think you've already lost the battle. Because if you have to help people in your region, in your county, in your state, do the standardization, and you don't have the resources to help them standardize and maintain that standardization over time, you're in trouble. And so you want to standardize to the extent possible. And I may have skipped past something here. No, we did that. So use re-existing data, minimize the need for human beings to be in the loop. So the strategic consideration, I've heard a lot of folks say we have an automated electronic case reporting system. All you have to do is log into your EMR, find the reportable result, and click send to public health. Well, the problem is physicians and nurses aren't out there looking for cases to report. That's the problem. And so you need something that can say, hey, these things might be reportable. And maybe even, hey, these are reportable, and why don't I just take care of that for you? Some have proposed, let's detect what's reportable and then let the infection control personnel or physician click send. Yes, I confirm. Maybe that'll work for some conditions that don't have high volumes. But be mindful when people are talking to you about automated electronic reporting systems. Are they truly automated? Because what needs to be automated is recognizing that a result needs to be reported. So some basics about our system. We, in our health information exchange, heard a lot of discussion about the need for standards and standardization of vocabulary and all of that. The great thing about standards is there's so many of them to choose from. And we've built a system to, and I just want to give you an example of how our system works. So we receive data from over, I've heard this morning, I was talking to some folks, over 1,400 data sources for our information exchange. And so we can't manually, humanly monitor all of these systems. So we've built a data pipeline using interface engines and some of our custom pieces, receive data, keep track of who's sending us data, call people when they're not sending us any data when we think they should. We receive their data, we put it into a raw message queue. We have all sorts of preprocessors that go through and make the changes to the hospital systems. Why do we need to do that? Because human beings don't comply with standards. Everybody's moving towards a CDA standard, the clinical document architecture. We've started receiving those and analyzing them in our health information exchange. We've got five different versions of the CDA right now from five different vendors. And so even in the face of standard specifications, human beings do not comply with them completely. And so if you want to receive data from people, you need to behave like a data beggar and say, I'll take whatever you give me. And so whether it's HL7 version 2 or version 3, we are going to need, if you want to receive data on large scale, you need to be able to deal with the variations. So we have a security access layer, but we monitor data flows. We standardize providers, so we know how to standardize physician identity. We standardize the vocabulary. We map both to a local Regan. We have a Regan Street vocabulary. We also map to the Loinc vocabulary as well. And then we standardize the patient in our MPI. Once we have a standardized message, standard vocabulary, standardize the patient, standardize the provider, then we can do all sorts of great things with this, including operating a notifiable condition detector off of that. And this is where the software I'm going to show you fits into our system. Once we've received this data, which, by the way, is also used, we store it in a community-wide electronic health record. We do physician quality reporting with it. We do medication reconciliation with this. We do healthcare utilization reporting with this. We do clinical decision support with this data. We need all of these use cases to support the system. If I only did the notifiable condition detector, we wouldn't be sustainable. If we do this, we might be sustainable. And that's one of the key points here. Because when you standardize that result for the NCD, for a notifiable condition detector, you've also standardized it for clinical decision support. You've already standardized it for medication reconciliation. And so other processes used by other people who are willing to pay will buy in. So I know I'm bouncing around from technical to sustainability here, but all of these pieces need to fit together. I don't know if people are familiar with Sudoku, that game where you have to fill in all the numbers. It's kind of fun. Well, building these sorts of systems are a little bit like that, because choosing which number goes down in this lower left corner depends on which number is up in that upper middle square, right? There's a lot of dependencies that don't seem like they should be dependent, but they are. And understanding all of these pieces. If you want automated electronic case reporting on a large scale, you better figure out how to put it into a sustainable model, because it won't sustain by itself. So either the CDC is going to come up with a new pot of money, and I say that with a big smile in the current, or we're going to figure out how to do it in the context of other things that might be sustainable. I won't go through the workflow here. When we get that message in, this is from a very high level, we first identify whether a message is potentially reportable. Potentially reportable message might be a serum prolactin level, not reportable to public health. A blood culture might be reportable. And so we actually filter on tests first and foremost. So if something could contain a reportable result, it continues down the line. And then we look up using what is now called the Reportable Condition Mapping Table, the RCMT. So it was called the Dwyer Table, then it was called the FIN Notifiable Condition Mapping Table. Now it's the Reportable Condition Mapping Table, which actually takes and maps from a Loinc code. So what is your test, blood culture, to conditions? What could possibly be reported out that public health would be interested in? And this mapping from Loinc to condition or bug is very important and one of the key pieces in the system. Once, if we find a test that sure enough says E. coli OH157, we send that automatically to our local and state health departments in a daily batch. There's up to 70 data elements per record. If anybody knows the HL7 version 2 standard, you see that a lot of these are simply fields that we peel out of the HL7 message and send to public health. This is a graph of the number of messages we found by year. This is an old slide, and I need to update it. But you can see that we're finding over 100,000 reportable results per year. Now, some of these are duplicates. So you might see duplicate records in this. Some of these, keep in mind, lead in Indiana is reportable regardless of the result. So our numbers might be bolstered a little bit by the fact that we've got some report alls in there. We analyze the system back when we first turned it on. So what we did is we looked at reporting rates back in 2000, if I remember correctly, in the first quarter of 2000, 3 months, and then we turned the system on and compared reporting rates. And what we found was that the electronic system, and this is no surprise to anyone anymore, found about four times more reportable electronic laboratory reporting cases. And it found them on average 7.9 days earlier, which just makes sense. If you get the human beings out of the loop, it can be delivered faster. So those results that I just described and the overall architecture I've described is true for our old system, which was written in DEC Basic and DEC C. Back in 2008, we received funding from the CDC to work on evolving it to the next generation. So we've gone from DEC Basic and DEC C to a Java-based system. And we'll talk a little bit about that and then show you the system. So the decision model in the old system was fairly it was fairly rule of thumb. If we could think of a way to find a condition, we'd write the rule and stick it in the system. With the new system, version 2 of our notifiable condition detector, oh, and by the way, I've also learned I can't call it notifiable anymore because, local clinic to public health is reportable. When public health sends it to the CDC, it's notifiable. So we need to change the name of our software, too, but that's just an aside. So in our new system, we have what's called an agent framework. It's essentially the ability to put in different analytic agents that can look for reportable results in different ways. We designed the system against the data we receive. We did not start with ontologies and come up with how, in my mind, I would model reportable disease reporting and how I think that the world of microbiology looks. We started with the data. Somebody asked Dylan one time, why did he rob banks? He said, that's where the money is. Why did you design the system against the data? Because that's where the reportable results are. And so we've designed our decision model is designed against the data. And so we have some different types of agents here. These next two or three slides, I think, is take-home point number two. This is the pragmatic approach to automated case detection. We've tested it against dozens of hospitals over 10 years, and it works. So our agents are, we have data classes. So a result might be discrete, numeric, or free text. We can look for clinical results according to the type of data being sent because the rules are different, and I'll show you that in a minute. They're not hearing me. Does that need to be on? No. Okay. There are some deterministic or heuristic agents. So I'm going to describe these in a little bit more detail as well. Depending on what the clinical test is or what the data source is, that may influence whether or not we report. And then there are flagged results or abnormal flag results. And so, as I said, this framework's been tested with thousands of data sources over several years. So a numeric agent, if lead results are a good example. So we start with our reportable condition mapping table. I look for the LOINC code for lead. If I see a lead, I look at the test. I say, oh, this is a lead test. All right. So if I weren't Indiana, I don't know, Marcus, do they report all lead results in Michigan? Let's say Michigan doesn't. Okay. So usually 10 micrograms per deciliter is the cutoff. So let's say, yes, we receive in Michigan a lead test because I know it's a lead test because of the LOINC code. Now I ask myself, what kind of a result is this? Well, LOINC tells me what kind of result it is. It'll tell you whether it's a numeric result or not. HL7 can tell you that what type of result it is. It's supposed to. So now I'm talking a little technical here. But not only does LOINC tell you what kind of a result you should be anticipating, numeric, but in the HL7 messaging standard, there is a place to tell you what type of result you should expect for this. Now, what we found, we were using the HL7 standard in that field, but people don't fill that out correctly. So we've gone to using the LOINC code and what type of result it is for these data class agents. So I know it's a lead test. LOINC tells me it's supposed to be numeric. Great. Now I just need to know what the abnormal range is, and those sorts of things will be in the reportable conditioning mapping table data repository. Then I say, okay, my result is 7. What's my normal range? Ah, it's below, so I don't send it. That's how a numeric result critic works. If it were a lead test and the result were 20, so it's above the abnormal range, we send it. Now, what we've found is actually some hospitals want us to use their reference range for numerics. They don't want to use somebody else's reference range. If we say it's abnormal, then you send it, but don't send it according to somebody else's rules. This adds to the complexity of the system. A discrete agent is fairly straightforward. So in LOINC speak, that's a nominal data type, so positive, reacted, detected, so on and so forth. So we look for key discrete terms. If we know that a chlamydia RPR test, present or not, they'll say detected, positive or negative. So we know based on the LOINC code what the result is, and then again we go looking for it with this different agent. So we've got a numeric agent, we've got a discrete agent. Then we have a free text agent, because most antibiograms today, you do a blood culture, you do a sputum culture, you get a free text report back today. Nobody sends a SNOMED except to send out labs like ARUP or Mayo or LabCorp, so on and so forth. So the vast majority of these bugs that are found are recorded in free text today. We use a natural language processing approach called NEGEX. It was developed by Wendy Chapman when she was at Pitt. She's now out at UC San Diego. It's a fairly straightforward process. You look for a token of interest, Shigella. You then look to see if it's been negated on either side. No evidence of Shigella. Shigella not present. There are only so many ways that you can negate a concept. And so you look for the concept if it's present. So I say I've got a LOINC code. It's blood culture. Well, now I've got 50 different results that I need to look for. So in the blood culture, I'll say, okay, I've LOINC code of blood culture. Notify reportable condition mapping table has these 50 things for this LOINC code. I'm going to go through every one of those 50 things looking for it. And so I first start by saying, do I find evidence of Shigella? Oh, I do find it. Is it negated in any way? It's not negated. Okay, it's positive for Shigella. We send it. And that's how we do natural language processing with the system. I'm going through this fairly fast, and there are lots of other details, and the code's actually available, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But this code, the whole system's available for free for download.
When you were talking about numeric and you mentioned about ranges, mm-hmm. and you mentioned that some hospitals mm-hmm. want to use their reference range, and you have your own that you encoded within your mapping tables?
So because we've gotten pushback, we have opted to only use what ranges hospitals, clinics send us. Why is that? Because they're very sensitive about what is done with their data, and they want decisions made about their data with the data they provide about their data. And so there may be ranges, and this reference range issue is something we come back and talk about it a lot. This is something that needs to be decided in an issue, but I want to get through this. It's a great question and would love to talk about it more, but the short answer is we use whatever is in the HL7 message. So if there's no reference range in the HL7 message, well, then use the default, right? Use whatever public health wants, right? No. What clinics have said, what the clinical world has said, you don't see a reference range, you don't send that result. And so that's, and so you fall back then on manual reporting. These are some of the human idiosyncrasies of working through these systems. So this is how the data class agent works. Based on a LOIC code, I'm just walking through the system. Test result comes in. LOIC code, is the test potentially reportable? The LOIC code has to be in the reportable condition mapping table for us to process it. If it's not, we ignore it. Based on the result characteristics, classify the test result type. Is it numeric? Is it discrete? Is it text? And you can see we put some examples up there. Lead, mumps, so on and so forth. Discrete results, HIV antibody, gonorrhea DNA, rapid strep antigens are all discretes. Then there's stool cultures, MRSA culture screen. We do some clinical work with this, so we look at chest x-ray reports, and this, we don't report those. Blood culture. So all of these can produce free text. So then based on that, we go to the positivity criteria, result outside of normal range, and you can see some examples of positives there. Result is one of known positives and how they report this, and we actually have to keep up. We have to maintain a discrete list, because people come up with new ways of saying it's there, present, positive, not negative, right? I mean, so there's lots of ways to discreetly state things. And then text results, where we use our natural language processing. So there are so many details here to go through. I could literally spend a half a day to a day just talking about this slide alone. There's a lot of, but again, go out, look at the code if you're so inclined, and you can learn a lot from that as well. We do have these rule-based heuristic report all. So there are some results. The state of Indiana wants to see all of them. I've mentioned this before. So if I see a lead test, I send it. I don't have to process it. I don't care what it says. The state wants to see it. If I see a confirmatory test like an HIV RNA quant, I send it. I don't care what it is. And so I can, based on those specific rules, I can sort of override the mapping table logic and override this other logic as well. The abnormal flag agent. This is a story that anyone who's interested in standards and compliance needs to hear. All you need to do, laboratorians, if you have an abnormal result, put a little A in the abnormal flag field in HL7. It's all you got to do. All you have to do. And we will know it's positive, we know it's reportable, and we'll take care of it. Do you know how often for a reportable result that abnormal flag is flagged? Less than 15% of the time. So we can't even do one little flag. And we want to move to mapping everything to SNOMED? I mean, let's think about what's preventing us from doing the right thing. And there's a lot of, the real world is messy and fuzzy and hard. And it's very frustrating to laboratorians and clinicians when you come in and say, well, all you need to do, doctor, is just select the pre-coordinated ICD-10 code and then select the other one, put them together, and then you'll be all set, and then we can take it from here. They're seeing 40 patients a day. They've got a process that they've learned for the last 15 years. And you just come in and said, oh, this is easy. Change it. No, they're not going to. And similarly with laboratorians. They're not thinking about that abnormal flag because the software they're using probably doesn't even allow them to set it. There's so many problems here. But so this is a great example. Before we start thinking about mass mapping of SNOMED codes and maintaining those, let's think about the abnormal flag. Just set the abnormal flag. And so much good can come out. And by the way, I didn't come up with this. Clem McDonald, who was my mentor at Regent Street, has been begging for years that people just set this flag and we could do so much better. So, abnormal flag agent, if we see that abnormal flag and the result is reportable, right? So it's got to pass the LOIC reportable result and it's abnormal, goes to the state. And, yeah.
In New York, there are some cases where, for example, syphilis, it might be abnormal, but not abnormal enough to make it notifiable.
Mm-hmm.
Factor that in
there? We don't. No. If it's abnormal, it goes. Yeah. And then the one other agent, it's sort of like the system's memory. We call it the decided result agent. What that is for every LOINC code and clinical result we find, so if I see a LOINC code for blood culture and the clinical result for that blood culture says positive for Shigella, the first time this system sees that, we are going to, the natural language processing free text agent is going to read that, do its natural language processing, realize it's positive, send it to the state. We store that LOINC code and that free text in a table. The next time we see that LOINC code, we look to see if we've seen the exact same clinical result before. If we have, we look at what we did with the last one, and we do what we did before. So we can actually short-circuit some of the computationally complex things by simply looking at our decided results table. It's sort of like a memory. Now, some people ask, well, what if you get it wrong? What if the first time you saw this, it was actually a false positive or a false negative? We can go in and edit that table, and actually we have the facility in our software to do it. But again, you don't hear anybody talking about this stuff with automated electronic laboratory reporting, do you? These are the real-world issues you got to be thinking about. What is your workflow? Because the system ain't going to be perfect. And how do you design it so that you can go back in and fix things and make it as efficient as possible? And so these are the sorts of considerations you have to be thinking about. What order do we run our agents in? Right now in the framework, we look at report all agents right now. So if you're from a source or you're a test that's always reportable, we just send it. We then check our memory, our decided results critic. Then we look, we go to the data class agents, and finally, if there's an abnormal flag set, we'll send it. We did some over a couple of months. We looked at how often which agents were being hit, and you can see the text report a lot of clinical results. So here's this 35% is our text results. A lot of our reportable results are being found in text results. Okay, so there's a whole lot of standardization that's going to have to go on in this country before we have fully automated electronic laboratory reporting. And that's a lot of work. Billions of dollars. So this 35%, if it's right, it might be wrong. If this 35% is right and 35% of clinical results today across this country are in free text, and that has to be standardized, that's billions of dollars of work. No question about it. So that's what we face. The next highest is the report all critic. So again, I think our results might be a little skewed by the fact that Indiana requires a reporting of all lead results and all confirmatories. So, it's not all confirmatories; it's only certain ones. I shouldn't overstate that case. But then you can see the data class agents are there as well. So, this is just an example. You'll have the slides. There's not going to be any test on this, but this is an example of the counts for the different types of results that we're receiving and sending. We can look at comorbidity. So if you're looking at reportable results, we took for the month of April, looked at 808 cases of HIV that we found, and we could look at the comorbidities in our community as well. So these are the sorts of things that you can do with the system. So the last two slides, and then we're off to the software demonstration, which is what y'all came for. The old system was built in DEC, C, DEC Basic. The new system we built as a module in OpenMRS. OpenMRS started off as a medical record system for developing countries who needed to do work in resource-constrained settings. It's based on the Regenstrief system that's been running for the last 40 years, just in a lighter container. The module basically adds functionality. OpenMRS, you can add modules which add additional functionality to it. There's an analytic component. There's message processing and our agent. It says critic there, but it's an agent architecture. The administrative component, codes management. What do I mean by code management? Not the development code, but the actual LOINC to condition mapping. There's a lot of administrative codes that need to be maintained in the system. Results management, remember that decided critic, if we need to go in and change that or delete certain things. Reports management, we can generate reports out of this system. We actually generate daily email reports and send reports to local and state health departments. So we're at the point where I'm going to do the software demonstration. But before we do that, Joe Gibson, who's here, I know he has to leave, and I asked him. He's a lead epidemiologist at Marion County Health Department, and he's a benefactor of the system. And I didn't know, Joe, if you wanted to say anything before you had to leave.
I don't know if you're going to get to it, but the system is running now in Indiana, and so it's used by... Actually, the results from the old system are still coming to the county health department because we've been slow at changing our data interface so we can accept the data from the new interface, and we're working on that now. The state health department is using the data from this system, and so now the interaction we have between public health and Regan Street around the system is mainly around trying to improve those agents, those filters, the filters that take the electronic lab data and pull out the reportable disease reports. So I don't know if you're going to go over that, but just as this is the public health interface with the HIE on this, they have a trouble ticket system. When the point person, technical person at the state health department talks to the epidemiologists and the various programs there, and the epis say, man, we're getting way too many false positives for this disease, he'll submit a trouble ticket. These guys will do some examination with the technical person, they'll look at the messages, they'll try to figure out what's getting through that shouldn't get through, and they'll tweak the filters. So there's the continuing maintenance of these systems that takes some effort and takes some resources on their side. And actually, I'm kind of wondering what's going to happen with that now that some of the funding is starting to go away a little bit. I just want to point that out. Outside of that, I think it's a great system. We've brought up the new system in-house, sort of in a test mode, and it took some work to figure out how to bring up OpenMRS and then bring up this detector on top of it, but we were able to do that. One person was able to do that on their laptop, and so we have a model to work on, and I think the administrative interface is probably one of the great strengths here, and Sean will be showing that, but to be able to administer a system like this with a good interface has a lot of value. Besides that, it is open source, so the more people we get involved in looking the logic behind pulling out those what is reportable and what's not reportable, the more of a community we can build around sharing information about how we do that, the better off we're all going to be.
Great, thanks, Joe. All right, since we are talking about this, so OpenMRS. As I mentioned, is where we built this. And so openmrs.org, it's deployed, I think, now in over 40 countries, largely developing countries. But I show you that homepage only to then show you that. I just want to look at the last slides here and make sure I didn't miss anything really key. I mentioned Sudoku. Very good. Yeah, too darn many animations in here.
It's okay.
It takes forever to get through. Okay. Yeah. So I put screenshots in. I put screenshots in just in case we... So this is the email report that we send out. We do influenza surveillance through this system. Thanks. I'm going to skip through this. We're pre-populating now. Once we see a positive, we can pre-populate the reporting form and send that out to physicians. So we add additional data in from our health information exchange and can send that out. But I'm not, I don't want it. So, yeah, so this is, what we've already said. Build systems that can accommodate the incompleteness. And the reportable condition mapping table is crucial. Again, I think that's the heart of the logic for reportable condition, automated reportable condition.
Thanks, everybody, for attending. We have recorded the demonstration as well as the audio, too. So if you all need any copy or send us an email to the PHI conference, we can send it back to you. Thank you.
Thank you.